All right, so it's 3:36 and we're gonna get started. Hopefully you received the packet, including the agenda, which the agenda is pretty straightforward today. More of just kind of regular business and logistics to get everything situated on the committee. And where we will start today, since Rachel's not here, I'll kind of pace us through until we get to electing a chair and a vice chair, if we're able to accomplish that today. Whoever would be taking over as the chair or the vice chair, then could kind of pick up the agenda and get us to the end. And with that, so let's start with the approval of minutes. And the minutes were fairly brief. So was there any comments or anything on the minutes from the last meeting?
I would move to approve the minutes of June 17th, 2021.
I'll second.
And all in favor?
Aye.
Okay. Motion passes, minutes are approved. We've had no... Sorry, let me get Val. Hey there.
Hi.
Hi,
Val.
Hi.
We just approved minutes from the last meeting.
Okay.
So yeah, if you had any additional comments for the minutes, feel free to let me know. Okay.
Okay.
There were no requests for public participation, and there's nobody in the waiting room. So we'll move on to the regular business. And the first item is to elect a RDAC chair and a vice chair. This would work, I believe, and please, Commissioner Eldridge and Lewis, if there's any points of order that I'm getting wrong or missing, I know you're both more familiar than I am as far as nominations, motioning and seconding and voting on a chair and a vice chair for this committee. So I guess. And
people can nominate themselves, I hear. So if anyone feels like there's anyone in the group, including themselves, who might make a good chair, let us know.
Somebody volunteers, it'd be wonderful.
Yeah,
I'd offer to do it if nobody else did.
Wait, who said that?
That's a volunteer right there.
I missed who spoke. Was that Corey?
That's me. Yeah.
Okay. And I'll just remind everyone the duties for the chair and the vice chair. The chair would primarily be responsible for running these meetings. I'm just kind of keeping to the agenda points and pacing through. That would also involve kind of being in charge of the motions and voting for anything that needed to be approved in that manner. Also the chair would be in communication ahead of meetings with myself and or Libby and Rachel to develop the agenda and make sure that we get all the items on the agenda that we should. Staff would then take the agenda and all the packet material and get it posted. The vice chair would serve kind of if the chair wasn't able to be present at the meeting, the vice chair would fill in that role. And is there anything that I'm missing on those two points? Okay.
And for points of order and you know, questions about communicating and posting the packet and all of that, staff can really support whoever is the chair. Corey.
I'll make it official and nominate Corey Grimm as chair of the Recreation Subcommittee.
Okay. And Corey, do you accept the nomination?
I can do that.
Okay. Is there anyone else that would want to volunteer or any other nominations for chair? And do we need a motion and a second and all that to vote?
I think it's a nomination, and if there's only one nomination, then we vote on that. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, then I guess all in favor of Corey Grimm becoming the ARDAC chair, say aye.
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 All right. Congratulations, Corey.
Boy. You are
the chair of the Recreation Division Advisory Committee.
And who wants to be Corey's second in command?
Go, Jordan. Come on, Jordan.
Did you say me?
Well, that was
I said Jordan. Jordan.
Oh, no.
Jordan, do you accept the nomination for vice chair?
I don't know. I'd rather not. I'm super busy right now. I'm trying.
That's okay. It's okay to set boundaries. It's okay to say no.
Sorry.
Who can?
That is okay.
I nominate Risa for vice. So.
No, Risa has an overflowing plate, but thank you for the offer.
So we have Val, and who else is missing?
We have Val, and then the two members missing would be Pam Downs and Rebecca Bjornson.
I'll do it.
Yay.
Okay. And all in favor? Okay. Great.
Thank you, both of you.
Thanks.
And I know I'll speak for Libby too. We will do our best to make life easy on both of you
when it comes to
doing this. So thank you very much.
We've both been involved at this kind of level of staff support with subcommittees. Lonnie's been kind of taking point with this one, but I work heavily with the Bee City USA subcommittee. So, and we're both really available to help in this whole process. So hopefully it won't end up being too much work on your shoulders.
Okay, with that, Corey, I'm going to hand over the virtual gavel.
Corey.
I know the rest of the agenda points.
I'm looking at him.
It's myself and Libby kind of giving more information. So,
you want to just go ahead then?
Yeah, I can jump in. We'll hit the draft bylaws. And I'll bring those up. And everyone has a copy available for the bylaws. My understanding is that everyone or a majority of people here have been able to review the bylaws, and everything has pretty much been situated with how that's all set up. The one thing Rachel wanted us to just quickly review is on the last page, the bylaws addendum A, which lines out the appointments and the term limits. We have, I don't know, would it be helpful to screen share?
Sure.
On this point, just so we're all looking at the same thing.
If you don't want to have to mess with that, you could make me, you got it.
I got it.
If you need, I can always be your co-presenter here.
Okay. And is this showing up well for everyone?
Yeah.
We're seeing the table of the appointments and terms.
Okay. I think at some point, maybe in the fall, if I remember correctly, Rachel's saying that we could look at filling the position one there, the vacant position. If you wanna just look quickly at your line with the current term expiring date and
right.
Make sure that that's looks good. And if there was any other discussion points, I'll kind of leave the floor open to everyone right now before we do anything else with it.
So
Go ahead, Risa.
So Lonnie, there's just two dates for our appointments. I mean, basically it's either 2022 or 2023. It's not staggered in a different way.
It looks like the staggering is that some of you will expire in 2022, which would be June of next year. And then some of you are for one additional year after that.
Yeah.
I guess it, you know, it makes sense in that we wouldn't have to refill all the positions simultaneously, but
of course
it does, but we do need to make sure that everyone agrees to those dates because it puts people in position for slightly longer than others.
I'm fine with that.
Yeah, I'm fine too.
Just, I would actually recommend that we have more tiers than two or a higher rotation rate, because I don't think that having half of the group leave at 1 year and then next half the next year, I would rather see a little more staggering than that, because we're never going to, it's so hard to find four people at once.
That's true.
Yeah, I totally agree with that.
Could we do something in January so that one is in June 30th of 22, and then January of 23, and then June 30th of 23?
Yeah, I mean, we could just randomly make two of the June 30th, 2022's Januaries and two Januaries of 2023 so that we've got two, 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 and two.
Mm-hmm.
So then I would ask the question, is that enough stagger, or do we need to stretch it more? Parks knows how hard it is to get people. Is that enough wiggle room, or should we make more wiggle?
I think it might also be hard to have an ongoing process where you're constantly trying to fill spots. Is that an issue?
I just know integrating like one new person is a lot easier than integrating two or more new people. That's.
Yeah, the city in general has a really difficult time filling these commissions and subcommittee positions. So I kind of like Leslie's take on it. So if we had to search for four people at one time, that'd be fairly daunting, I think. And a lot of times, hey, the people are on it, find somebody that can replace you. There's that mode. It's always a good way to bow out gracefully if you're moving on. And I have a question. Program participant and community partner. Could somebody define that for me?
I'll do my best. I think when we initially recruited the positions, we were looking to attract both, both types of recreation user, but also have it, those that partner with us to put on programs, and then people who are participating in programs that we offer, if that makes sense.
Okay, thank you. And a two-term limit, is that a standard procedure as well?
I have to assume so. I'm honestly not.
For somebody who's been on for 20 years on parks, obviously the term limit thing, I'll probably kick that into gear when I leave that.
I have heard that term limits are kind of a standard thing, but I will say that we haven't established them and worked really hard to setting that as a firm boundary in the B City USA subcommittee yet. So I think part of the reason that we haven't enforced that term limit is because it sometimes is hard to find really motivated people who want to stay with it. And so when they tend to want to stay with it, we use their energy for as long as we can. But I believe that Rachel has expressed that term limits are a good thing and that it's something we should probably work toward. So
sometimes with term limits, you can the whole committee can vote to say, well, this person wants to stay on, and so we're going to give them an exception. So if there's somebody that you, if you're having trouble filling a spot, I believe that's an option. If you're having trouble filling a spot and you have someone really good, then the committee can vote to say, hey, we're going to let this person come back. Does that sound accurate?
Yeah, maybe we should include that in the bylaws, because I agree that we should be able to have some stability if there's people that have really contributed and would be great to keep in the group. And then I would almost, so back to Risa's point, like, is having two positions to fill every 6 months or to, well, hopefully people will stay in for their times. But I mean, if we really wanted to do like one member every year, we could get crazy and just from all the way down to the bottom with Corey here, you could just do, 26, 25, 24, 23, 22.
I think that's probably not practical starting with this first slate of seven, but I do think making the change to two vacancies in January of 2023, and then two more in June 30th, or maybe consider pushing those out to like September 30th, 2023. You know, that gives you a little bit more recovery time between the recruitment efforts. But, you know, if, and then the whole next round, you could alter the timing again to ultimately get to that goal, Leslie, where you're only dealing with one per year. I just don't think you can go straight into it where everybody came on the same date.
Yeah, that's a great suggestion. I like September too as well, because at least in my world, everybody's thinking about the feels like the year is starting and people are taking on commitments in September, and June, everyone's clocking out.
And just 2 points. One, it's a little trickier now because this is a brand new committee. And so we're just, you know, we're starting off really slowly and, you know, we will get a groove, but I don't know. It seems reasonable to stretch us just a tiny bit longer just to help to stabilize what it is we're doing, how we're doing it. And then to definitely do the staggering so that it isn't a heavy burden, to leave a big gap. And the other thing is, just to clarify, it's the Ashland Parks Commission that approves these folks, right?
Yeah.
So that's way better than having to wait for the mayor to do it. Because I know on the city commission that I serve on, it's, to say it's a laborious process is generous. And so it is a small advantage that we have that we're just dealing with the Parks Commission. So just saying.
So are we looking at setting these dates now for June, September, January, June? Is that June, September again? How are we dividing this up? How many groups?
Well, I'm feeling like, and I don't want to overstep my bounds here, that it may be worth tabling for Rachel to be able to coordinate a little bit more on this and take the feedback from this meeting and then be able to revise this schedule and maybe communicate directly with committee members to get it sorted out.
So can we vote to approve the bylaws, leaving it up to Rachel's discretion to set the term limit dates divided up?
Well, actually, I'd like to say let's propose our idea and then let Rachel vet it. And then we might be a little bit further down the road more quickly.
She may also know more about the process, because it may be a challenge for the city to process one at a time every couple months rather than doing a batch at a time. So she may have some input on that as well.
Then let's share with her what our intention is so that she can take it into consideration when she's trying to when she gives her two cents about doing this.
Maybe a question might be, I think Corey asked a moment ago whether we would do it in three groups, three sets, with mm-hmm. two people expiring on each of the three dates. Is that what the current proposal is?
Except there's seven people, so.
So three to four.
So it could be two, two, and three, or two, 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 and one.
Where we could have that vacant one just be expiring in the very last of those sets in date order.
That's a great idea.
That is a great idea.
So there would be, what I'm hearing is that there would be three expiry dates, and one of them would be January, but was the proposal to turn the June dates to September dates?
That's what I thought, but I don't know if that's not enough time between, like, if we have a recruitment process in September and then again in January, would we want to have just twice a year do September and March?
Mm.
If we're doing twice a year, we probably want January, June, or September, March.
I like September, March personally, but... either is fine, but it's not like.
Well, that sounds good. I'm hearing September of 22, March of 23, and September of 23.
That sounds good.
And in those, we can just divvy people up relatively evenly with two in each set, and the vacant position expiring in September of 23.
Sounds good.
Yep.
And then Rachel can do what Rachel does, and maybe we'll be a little bit further down the road, and our input will be shared. So that's our job.
I appreciate that. That sounds good. And does anyone have any strong feelings about where individual committee members ought to expire, or can we just kind of randomize that?
Yeah.
Okay.
I personally would suggest that our chair's expiration date be the latest, but that would be totally up to Corey, but obviously our leadership, we would want to have like a solid leadership with the body just being formed.
Uh-huh.
Seems to me.
I like it.
And we want, might want to consider including the voting to extend the term limit as well, if that's not part of it.
It is not currently part of it. I read it.
Yeah. Okay. I would want to run that past Rachel, see what she thinks as well, I'd say.
That's a solid recommendation for an addition.
Well, good. Yeah. We want to get this right. So thank you for all the feedback.
Thank you.
So then is it appropriate to approve these with recommendations made? Can we do that?
Sounds good.
Do we need to have someone do a motion and all that?
Oh, I have another before we go there. It's been a while since I've looked at these. I'm trying to remember, does it outline the process for recruiting or for new members? Is that in the bylaws? Let's see.
Thanks.
I'm going to go ahead and stop share on this so I can scroll through but not confuse everyone. Mm-hmm. To help
purpose, look. Membership. So the copy that I have here says, oh, that's commissioner members. Never mind. Okay.
We do have to have two community partners. Those are people offering programs and a maximum of four.
Hmm.
But it doesn't look like there are any other limits on that. Article 3.
So we're electing chair and vice chair every year. It's an annual thing. Is that? That's what that says here.
That's how commissions, that's how city commissions are. And I know that if you're the chair, if you wanted to, there's some kind of rules, but I believe you can serve, you know, 2 years, but you're re-elected each year.
Okay, so there's nothing on here that talks about like new members. Okay. Well,
it doesn't say who does the vetting of new members.
I know. I mean, I'm used to that sort of process being in the bylaws, but I don't know that the city of Ashland normally has that, because that's probably the standard bylaws for a lot of our advisory councils. It's just strange to me that it doesn't have the process, because it always ends up being kind of weird. Like, we talk to our friends and then like the friend comes on to the, like, there's no public noticing, or it's kind of confused me.
If you look under Article 3, it says RDAC members are appointed by the chairperson with recommendations coming from the committee.
Right.
So that doesn't necessarily mean that the city is looking them over?
Probably the commission. I think Parks Commission must sign off, but yeah, maybe not.
No, they do. That's what it says. They're appointed by APRC chair.
Oh, APRC. I was thinking chair of advisory.
I wanted to mention that in our initial recruitment for committee members here, there was a publicly noticed application. And I think that's fairly standard protocol by the commission, that we put out an application, that we notice it and follow all those rules. Now, including that in the bylaws, that again is something that we could take back to the drawing board and see if that is appropriate to put it in the bylaws and make sure that that's outlined.
Can we add that to our list? I think that's the third thing that we're passing back to Rachel.
Be more explicit about how the members are vetted.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like that. I have the three suggestions. The first is the rearrangement of the way that the terms expire. The second is including a note about how the committee itself could vote to override the term limits if necessary. And the third is becoming more explicit about the process for vetting and public noticing a new member.
We're such good advisors.
We advise about all the work that somebody else does.
I wanted to make mention, Pam. I don't know, Pam, you can hear me. This is Lonnie, and I hope you weren't waiting long in the waiting room. I just noticed you there. So I just wanted to make sure everyone knew that Pam Downs is now in the meeting.
Great. Welcome, Pam.
Sorry, one other thing. The bylaws say that we will be meeting every other month, and I don't know if we care about that language. It seems that we're meeting monthly, or?
Our next scheduled meeting would be in October.
Oh, okay.
So Rachel confirm that we would meet again in October.
I think one of the ways that we can propose keeping the momentum going without having to meet every month is once we have working groups with goals established, then some of that legwork can be happening in the off months. But during this ramp up where we didn't have a chair and we didn't have individual spin-off working groups, it was kind of helpful to meet more regularly because we were kind of getting the momentum going. And I think by the end of the meeting, Lonnie and I can kind of propose a couple of working groups that can allow us to be more effective and go back to the bi-monthly meeting schedule.
Great.
Okay. So do we need any kind of motion or anything to approve what we just said?
I'm not sure. I mean,
I think we have to vote to approve the bylaws, don't we?
Can we approve them yet if there are changes
still to be made?
I think it would, and again, I'll defer to our commissioners too, sure. That it could be an appropriate thing to table the bylaws until the next time we meet so that we can get everything organized, because it does sound like there's a few meaty chunks there that we want to get taken care of before we approve.
Yeah, and I think if we approve these, we would have to just include those in and not have them tentative in order to pass it on as approved. So that's what I would suggest, since these are kind of tentative things and it may change, and then we'd have to go back and re-vote to the amendments that were accepted by Rachel, or we'll be discussing it after Rachel puts her two cents in. We'll be re-discussing and then vote, I would say.
Sounds good.
And we don't really need these to do the in the interim till October. I don't know. I don't know the threat level of not having bylaws, and we haven't really done too much definite decision making yet, but a lot of discussing.
And are we ready for reports?
Yeah.
Sure.
Libby, you can go first.
Sure. Let's see here. I have a couple of notes. Okay, so a report for you all about North Mountain Park Nature Center. In case you're curious, over the last couple of months, we've had a huge number of visits to our park. We have trail counters at three entrances. And oftentimes I ask people to guess how many people visited our park in a month. But rather than playing Jeopardy with you all, it was 4,400 unique visits in the month of June alone.
Wow.
Yep. And that doesn't even capture every single trail entrance. So those are the three main entrances that are getting counted.
How does just at North Mountain Park?
Mm-hmm.
Not at Lithia Park or any of the other parks?
Nope, because those don't have trail counters. I'm the only one who has them. So I don't know how it would compare to what's happening at Lithia, but it's huge. It's substantial.
How does that work? Where are the trail counters? Is it just like a beam or something?
Yeah. It's a beam that goes across the trail, and it's at the bike path entrance, the walking path down from the parking lot and the walking path down from the pavilion all have a sensor shooting across the path.
Do you know how many of those are like classes of like preschool things like that?
Since we aren't doing any classes right now, those are all visitors. And in the past, I've had to, extract numbers when we have like an active school program season where there's, 1,000 kids being pumped through the park in the spring and another 1,000 in the fall. I've had a hard time untangling those numbers from our raw visitation numbers, but it's happening automatically now because we're not running programs. So those are
like summer schools, like not affiliated programs, like Waldorf summer schools and things like that. Like my daughter's in a Waldorf sort of summer preschool thing, and they go to different parks. So there's like a group of 20 kids or something that come through.
I don't have any way of extracting that from the totals, because the only time, I'm not often told about those. Right. But I would love to be. So if you wanted to tell your school that it's great to give us a heads up when there's going to be a group on site, that helps us enormously. But oftentimes they just come in here and they don't check with us. So I don't know how many of those visits are those kind of groups.
Yeah. And that's a counter of visits. Mm-hmm. Every time a person crosses the beam.
And they're not all unique individuals, but right. People come to the park every day,
Exactly.
But yeah. Those are visits.
Yeah.
Does it go both ways?
Because they could theoretically come and pass two trail counters in the same visit. So that's always been a possibility when I was trying to figure out the way to configure these for the best possible estimates. Mm-hmm. And so I always say it's possible that people pass in front of more than one trail counter or pass more than once upon a visit, but we're also not tracking entrance to the park at three other main entrances where there are no trail counters. And so because we have a very porous system where you can come in from so many different sides, I think that the people we double count probably are offset by the people we don't count at all. So, yeah. Risa?
Does the beam differentiate between two-legged and winged and hoofed, pawed creatures?
No, it doesn't.
I don't know. That's like really interesting to me.
Yeah, Leslie?
Are these the SOU counters that the OAL program is putting in? Oh, if they're not the same, I was going to say they kind of do because they're at a particular height. So most animals would go below the sensor. But I'm not familiar with these particular sensors. I know that the Outdoor Adventure Leadership Program is doing that up in the watershed to look at trail impacts, like how trail use, but I guess that's a different, maybe the same technology, but maybe different people doing the counting in North Mountain Park.
Yeah, that it's different, but I'd be interested to see what kind of technology they're using. So anyway, that was a fun discussion. But kind of back to the updates, Jen continues to maintain the site with the help of volunteers. Everyone's working tirelessly in poor conditions out there. We should probably let people know that the Beach Creek ponds have entirely dried up. We're seeing massive changes in those ecosystems. They're very shallow and now there's no open water. So we've lost our aquatic species for the season. Let's see. Jen and I are working on revamping and reprinting the interpretive signs throughout the park. We're booking 11 community programs and 10 service learning activities for this fall, but we have had to cancel the Bear Creek Salmon Festival due to partners just not feeling safe to have a hands-on community event at this time. I presented at the EEAO conference last week, the Environmental Education Association of Oregon, with Suleiman Shelton, our volunteer coordinator. We had a great full day program about putting volunteers at the helm of your environmental ed programming. And another program about developing nature play areas from the ground up with no money. And I'm also working with OnRep to do some teacher professional development and get the educational skills that we have as an informal provider into the hands of classroom teachers, because I'm not able to work with as many students directly myself. So it seems particularly important to be working with teachers and giving them the PD that it takes to work with their kids outside and put some of our EE skills into their hands. And the last thing I was going to say is that we've been trying to come up with a plan to reopen the center's doors. And I was looking at how to do that for the fall, but there's only two of us here. And in order to run a service learning program, it takes two staff people and volunteers. So any service learning that we booked, that created a conflict where we couldn't pull a staff person off to cover the front counter during that. So we're putting that off in favor of service learning, because the maintenance of the site with those volunteer groups and the education that we can do alongside that volunteerism seem to be a higher priority than pulling myself off to be front desk staff on those dates. So we're still trying to figure that out, but we've pushed that out, which seems to be okay in the long run, because COVID is throwing us a curveball anyway. So we will revisit this after the service learning season is over. And that's my update.
Very any more good. Follow-up questions on that?
Sure.
I have a question for Libby. What about the gardener volunteer group? I'm assuming they show up kind of on their own and organize themselves and that?
Well, they don't organize themselves. Jen spends a lot of time organizing that group, and they come out every Wednesday morning from about 8 to 10:30 every Wednesday and garden in the demonstration gardens. And then we also have the heirloom gardeners with the Ashland Garden Club, and they themselves are a little more self-directed and they need a little less oversight from us. And they come in monthly to maintain the gardens out front of the center.
Way to keep making lemonade.
Thanks, Risa. Yeah.
It's beautiful out there. Really is beautiful.
Thank you. It is really lovely. Yeah, it's amazing.
How long is your service learning season?
We have activities booked until the end of, starting when school starts and going through mid-November, third week of November.
And what age are your service learners?
We'll serve anywhere from third grade all the way through high school, seniors in high school. So service learning can be adapted up or down. Those programs are pretty flexible and scalable. So we don't take anyone younger than third grade because the service component isn't really safe with younger than third, but right. Anything from third grade up, we have programming for that.
Mm-hmm. And these are groups or individuals?
Those are classes. So the generally classes, we can offer service learning to any organized group. So it could be a church group or a boys, Girl Scouts or Boy Scouts, but mm-hmm. most often it's a single class brought out by the teacher. And that field trip lasts for about 2 hours and involves both an educational component that's standards aligned and then a simultaneous service component. And we work with, we'd split and switch the class size group. So if there's 30 kids, you've got 15 doing each component and then you switch them halfway through. And altogether the field trip is about 2 hours and it's free because they provide that service back to the park.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Leslie.
This might be a silly question, but so all these programs that we're talking about actually fall under the recreation division? I'm assuming, although I wouldn't have necessarily assumed that if you weren't talking about it.
The recreation division, parks division line runs right down the middle of my face. I don't know if anyone can see it, but it is fundamentally dividing me and splitting me in half. But my salary is paid by recreation budget. And the materials that we buy to support those programs comes out of the recreation budget because the Nature Center is housed in recreation. But Jen and I both do a large amount of park management, maintenance, planning, and leading service groups. So that distinction between parks and rec is particularly awkward and humorous when it comes to our jobs.
So in terms of education programming, that is mostly housed and budgeted through what is called the recreation division.
Yeah.
So, okay, that's helpful.
Absolutely. That's totally how it works. Yeah, Risa?
So this could be another silly question. Why? I don't know if it's like, if this committee could learn more about that existing distinction and understand the distinction, because it boggles my brain. And to understand the distinction, I understand that's how parks has functioned up to this point. I wonder whether it could be appropriate to, once we understand it, to assess whether or not it's still relevant, whether or not it makes sense
that
to help division. Parks function at its highest possible level.
Are we talking about a distinction between parks and rec? Is that the...
No, education and recreation. Do I have that right?
Which at the moment is all recreation. Because the budgetary divide is between recreation and parks, and things that are education related come out of the recreation budget.
So yeah, I think like at the moment, any activities that are going on within the facilities or the lands of APRC are pretty much community activities are all falling under recreation. So it's like not really recreation, it's community.
We should rename it.
Well, it's a mix. It's one and it's the other. And so I'm just putting forth a question, a curiosity about the existing distinction. And yeah, I just want to support parks, you know, being able to fulfill and reflect what's actually happening.
So if I understand correctly, Libby, you are you fall under recreation, but you are doing parks, sort of maintenance facility type park stuff and doing recreation, but you're paid by recreation. Is that
accurate? Yeah, I think that's a good assessment. And as to how much of my position I actually spend doing park maintenance type stuff, that's I haven't been clocking in, clocking out, or billing my time.
Right.
You know, but there is definitely an overlap, especially in Jen's position. She's also paid for by the rec budget, and her position heavily requires her to spend a lot of time on site maintaining the park and working with volunteers to maintain the park and planning for the long-term seasonal maintenance, and especially with the lack of seasonal employees during the pandemic and with the budgetary shortfalls and how difficult everything is right now, Jen's been doing a lot outdoors. Mm-hmm. I still feel like I'm pretty heavily at my computer doing rec related work. Jen's position is complex in that way, and I've often wondered how much of her time goes to either one, but it's not like we're billing parks for those hours, you know. We're not punching a timer, so.
And I'd like to say, we've been teaching the Valley's children biology for years now, and I've always supported it, even though I think, you know, the school district, be nice if they helped us a little bit, no matter if it's recreation, parks, it's all kind of one thing. And I've always felt biology is really important, and it becomes a recreation when kids are looking in microscopes and seeing little things swimming around. That must be kind of thrilling in some ways, I would hope. And so even though, is it parks' duty to teach children? Not necessarily, that isn't our main mission, but hey, somebody has to. And I think it's a wonderful place if you've been out there and seen the kids and doing all this adventurous stuff. It's a wonderful thing, and the kids are excited. And so I'm always supportive of it, even though it does, you know, there's some money involved, and the amount we get returning, you know, everything Parks does is subsidized in some way. We're not in the business of making money like some departments. And that's kind of our handicap too, is to justify our existence when we're not a mercenary group of the rest of the departments that actually can generate income. We have more intrinsic value, but hey, we always try to justify our existence, and that's something we're gonna have to do even more so coming up.
So this is maybe a question that should be obvious. The answer maybe should be obvious, but is this advisory committee just focused on the recreation aspect, or are we also focusing on the parks aspect?
That is a fantastic question, and it will be a little difficult to answer because really the intention behind this group is to focus on the recreation aspect. So yeah. You know that would be Rachel's immediate reaction, but I would also add that it's impossible to extricate those two things from one another. So while your authority really is around recommendations to recreation, I think you are the right body to be posing questions that that get at the interface between those two things, because you can't do one without the other. So I don't know if that's helpful at all.
Yeah, it's useful.
Yeah, I think it's interesting that this discussion sprang out of your report about a service learning program, mm-hmm. because the learning piece, the education piece, clearly falls under the recreation, but the service piece is benefiting the park, and it is, you know, park stewardship, really.
Yeah.
And so I think it's good to just acknowledge that at the very least. We may not be able to shuffle the game board in any significant way here, but it's good to understand it. It's good to acknowledge it.
That's wonderful.
Yeah. Risa, did you have something else you wanted to say?
I'll wait a second.
Leslie, I saw your hand was up.
Yeah, I was just going to add, you all know that I'm an avid trail user, and there's this very similar kind of confusion as to where the trail groups fit in, because both the pedestrian and mountain bike trail groups, they're nonprofits and they both do quite a bit of trail work and are assisting, like want to be more involved and want to assist in the parks area. And then they're also, not until very recently, were formally considered, you know, programming that goes on as recreation. And it was only very recently that Rachel kind of clarified, oh yes, when there are groups operating in the watershed on APRC land, that's basically like the same thing as using a tennis court. That's a recreation activity that's happening with APRC. But there's, it's that same funny kind of netherland that, you know, the communities that I circle around in, trail runners, mountain bikers are just like, I don't know how to interact with APRC or how, what to do or how to, what channels to go through. So that's a kind of interesting parallel.
Yeah, you get that.
So we have about half an hour left. Do you want to move on to Lonnie and his report, or did Risa, did you want to jump in there?
Well, before we move on from this discussion, I guess I'm asking this committee to consider or requesting an opportunity to understand better the existing infrastructure of parks, because I mean, personally, I would feel more able to do my job if I understand better why it is the way it is. And kind of my nature is to want to really look at it and see if it's serving parks the way, in the best way possible. So I don't know who, you know, if that's Rachel, if that's a parks commissioner, if it's Michael Black, I don't know, but I'm putting that out.
So we have a request. Future. We have a request for next time to maybe get a little bit more clarity on what falls under which heading,
and why.
And why? Okay.
Yeah, I mean, Michael Black recently gave us a talk on the org chart. I'm sure Rachel could come and give us a talk on the org chart as well. I could use a reinforcement also, but I think the org chart has recently changed a little bit because Rachel Dial's position, her title has changed as well. So the updated org chart and like a discussion of that would, I think, can't hurt.
It can't hurt, and that's one thing to see sort of the internal structure, but I think your point, Leslie, about the public perception, particularly if there's confusion, particularly if there's people and groups wanting to offer resources and they're considered recreational users because of the activity that they're doing, but the benefit is actually going to the park land, you know, or the park trail or whatever, that is tricky, and we need the clarity so that we can help other people understand how to connect with the agency and how to offer what they have to offer. We definitely don't want to leave those offers on the table because people can't figure it out.
Yeah, just a little point of history. The Parks Commission and the park system was started in 1908, but the recreation part, when we hired Rachel, really the recreation started. Recreation was almost non-existent before Rachel. So we hired her because we wanted to start a recreational part of, so it's a fairly new thing. And Rachel, I mean, all this we're dealing with and everything really started with her, and starting with the catalog and the seasonal, all those things. It was, seemed like some of the earlier directors were using the YMCA as our recreation system, which is not a really great system, but you know, I remember when North Mountain Park came in, there was a large component of sports people that wanted it all sports activities. And then there was a few people, Michael Utoff, anybody who remembers him?
Of course.
He showed people around and said, this is the most amazing place back here behind where the fields are going to be. And it's riparian, and it needs to be supported. And so the whole nature center came out of that. And there's this old farmhouse, and they didn't really have the funds to build a whole new facility. And so I was on the historic commission. So I said, hey, well, I rehab buildings all the time, and maybe it's not the first choice, but it was way more reasonable to rehab the farmhouse into the center and start, so we could actually get started with the program. And so the recreation is a fairly new thing. And then getting to the parks are the venues for the recreation. Basically, it's the property owned by the parks used by the parks, to say the community center, the Pioneer Hall are owned by the city, but we run them. And so we are the ones who schedule and the Grove. And, so I guess this is all fairly new stuff in the history of the park system. So it's kind of exciting in some ways. I mean, the Nature Center was one of the more amazing parts of that whole recreation addition. And like I say, science, to me, science is recreation. So, and education is recreation. I don't know. In my old school, I guess, So anyway.
I think there's a lot here that we can talk about next time. There's so many conversation starters in amongst all of this, but I'm thinking perhaps if we table some of these, I'll make notes by watching this video, and we can come back to some of these really great questions and these points of intersection. But I'd love to pass it off to Lonnie now, because I know that he has a lot to himself to share.
Okay, well, thank you. Very good discussion. The only thing I'd want to add to all of that would just, from my vantage point, it is parks and recreation. We definitely don't want it to become parks or recreation. And I can think of a few other good examples, like a volunteer coordinator, which is a recreation position, who a large majority of the work that he does benefits parks, mm-hmm. And the maintenance in parks with work parties and that sort of thing. And also there is a lot of work that the parks do for things like setting up the ice rink tent. They pour a lot of resources into us as well. So it's a symbiotic relationship. In order to have a really good functional working environment, you know, I try to always keep that at the forefront, that these are partners and coworkers, even though the budget is split a few different ways. I'll provide my updates, and we are working towards hopefully reintroducing programming in the fall at the Grove, indoors. Of course, that is still up in the air and kind of being challenged, but we are hopeful we can get the doors open soon. We do have a contractor coming into the Grove, into the gym, to refinish the floor. That project will begin August 30th. So the gym floor should be usable again. We're going to give it a little time to cure. I'm hoping the Monday after, the week after Labor Day, we should be full going there, as long as we can get the doors open and get programs back in there for fall. So still kind of up in the air. I did want to make quick mention, there are some efforts underway, which Val with Rogue World Music, and Val here, and also Anna Byers, we are going to be presenting a Oregon Recreation and Park Association conference session that is, the title of it is Event Planning with Cultural Competency. And it'll be spotlighting the work that we've done over the past 5 years with the Ashland World Music Festival. And so I'm looking forward to doing that and sharing amongst the entire, the state recreation professionals, as to how we've taken on this process, how the work we've done with community partners like Rogue World Music has allowed us to move the ball forward, an advanced thing than not only creating more valuable community events, but also hitting the topics of diversity, equity, and inclusion. So looking forward to that. That will be in October. So we're starting our planning for that. And I guess I'll break the news here first to the public. We have faced some challenges at the Daniel Meyer pool, obviously with the smoke and the condition of the pool and everything. We are dealing with some fairly drastic reductions in staffing because of staff leaving for school, for college, for sports programs. So beginning on August 24th, we are going to have to adjust our daily schedule, shorten the daily schedule, and that on August 30th, we will be closed. So we're having to adjust our regular schedule. On August 24th, out of the 10 lifeguards that we have staffed, there will be three left. So three is the number of staff, not necessarily guards. We need at least two guards and an additional staff member in order to meet all of our emergency action plans in case there was an emergency at the pool, which includes, you know, providing adequate CPR, someone to call 911, crowd control, that sort of thing. So we're, you know, we've talked with the staff that, you know, we've tried to keep as many people on for as long as we can. But really that is the crux of why we have to adjust our schedule. So on the 24th, 25th, and 26th, we will run our normal midday open lap swim and senior swim and water aerobic programming. So that would be Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. On Friday, we'll run one rec swim session in the afternoon going from 1 to 5. Saturday, we will do a special open lap swim that will go from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Followed by a rec swim session from 2 to 5 p.m. Sunday, we'll have rec swim starting at 1, ending at 4:30 or 4, and also having water polo to finish the day. So it's not what we wanted to do, but that's the reality that we're facing. And I know many other pool facilities throughout the state have already been closing or dealing with intermittent closures, not only because of smoke, but also because they cannot find staff to work. And we have hired pretty much any warm body that said yes, we hired. We were very lucky for the staff that we hired. They were exceptional, very young, but very talented. We were very appreciative for their work. I will ask for the committee members here, we are going to make an official announcement, and we'd like to be able to kind of control the message a little bit so we can get the right information out. I know once it hits, there's going to be a lot of talking and a lot of, heat coming at us. And I would like that heat to come towards me and not our staff, because school, of course, is the priority. They have, you know, fall sports and college and life to move on with. So I'll leave it at that. Those are my updates. And yes.
Do you have any updates on Pioneer Hall and the community center?
I do not. I'm not. I've been involved with some of the talks that the city has, because they're city-owned buildings, and they've been working on getting contractors in to handle that project. I've been lightly involved, but primarily that's a city issue.
So there's no plan right now to open either of those?
Obviously not
the community center, but the Pioneer Hall, no?
I honestly don't know. I think Pioneer Hall may be being used in some capacity, but again, I'm not sure. That would be a question for Rachel.
Maybe we can do some digging to see if we can find the answers to that, Corey. I don't know myself who to ask because I'm not in the loop about those facilities, but I know that after this meeting, I can reach out to Rachel and we can try to find you an answer.
I was partly interested for the scouts because right now they've been meeting outside, which didn't go so well this week. So they had to more or less cancel their meeting because they didn't have a safe place to meet out of the smoke. So they're wondering if Pioneer Hall would be available at some point.
Yeah, Leslie.
Just to confirm, Daniel Meyer Pool is closed when AQI is over 100, or what is the?
Yeah, that's a good question. Our policy that we adopted a few years ago, we would be closing when it is above 150 or 151, which puts us in the red category. We potentially will either stay open or be open in the orange, which is, I believe, the 100 or 101 to 150 level. But there's a few other caveats that we have to deal with as far as like on-site visibility, how many swimmers are in the pool, how staff are tolerating the conditions. So that's kind of what we've been operating on. We have had a new list of OSHA rules for exposure to wildfire smoke come through just recently. So when we are in that orange level, you know, we're taking the measures to make sure masks are available for staff, that they're educated on what symptoms are, you know, understanding what qualifies as a sensitive group, which under OSHA rules is anyone under 18 would be considered in a sensitive group, which is a large portion of our staff.
Well, the reason why I asked is that I saw on social media that the Bandshell concerts were being canceled for the rest of August due to smoke. And it seems this fire that is in Canyonville that's 20% contained, I mean, it hardly matters. not to be negative, Nelly, but the staffing issue is almost secondary. How much is that pool even going to be open for the rest of August? It just seems like if you need a scapegoat, it's not really the staffing. It's the smoke. that would close it anyway, don't you think? I mean, for most of the days, I don't know.
You're right. That is what we're dealing with right now. But it's hard to predict where the smoke will be and when. I would be hesitant to look that far out and I guess scapegoat for the smoke. When the real issue is we just can't staff appropriately.
I think people will understand that given how many restaurants are not able to be open full hours right now. It's a thing everywhere. So people should understand that.
I mean, does the staffing shortage relating to the pool have to do with enough days of people not having work, like staff not having work because of the smoke?
I'm not sure I understand the question.
If you guys are closed every, you know, all of a sudden randomly, like you're closed this day because of smoke, and then the next day it's smoky, and these kids that were supposed to be working aren't having work that day because, you know, like they don't get a regular schedule because it's dependent on the air quality, then, I mean, that also seems like it's not really a scapegoat, but it's still has to do with the smoke, not just a staffing shortage. It's like a staffing shortage because of the air quality index, you know?
Sure. Yeah.
And we've traditionally lost our staffing by Labor Day because of the school, because there are kids in the swim programs and they have to be certified. And it's a pretty high level to work at the pool. And years ago, the master swimmers were saying, well, we want to swim in the off hours. And we said, well, if you guys supply your own lifeguards, then yeah, that's the only thing stopping it was meeting all the criteria for the safety. And so kind of put the onus on them. Hey, you get your own certified lifeguards and then we'll talk. But it's a really complicated system. And for most of the history of the pool, it's been staffed by high school kids, you know, and it's really an interesting program in that way. And the water polo and the swimmers and all stuff, basically were this, yeah, I mean, they always went headed back to school in August, September. And so that was limiting the time we could be open. So it was just kind of a pragmatic thing for years. And then somebody mentioned the restaurants and just staffing in general for everybody, just getting the amount of help wanted signs in town is pretty amazing. You know, there's a real shortage of people.
Not to get anything off, but it says on our agenda here that we're supposed to have needs assessment working groups. Do we need to leave any time for that? Because we're down to 15 minutes. Is that something we need to discuss today?
That's a good point. I'm wondering, and I'll just kind of throw this out here and let anybody else correct me, but without bylaws in place, which I think does also direct the formation of working groups.
Yeah.
It may be appropriate to hold off on that.
Can you give us a heads up of what that means so that we can think about it over the week or the couple weeks?
Yeah, absolutely. If we're ready to move on, Risa, did you have another question before we?
I just had a comment, Lonnie. I think the realities of at this time on parks, I wouldn't call any of them a scapegoat, because really there are three huge issues. I mean, yes, there's the smoke.
I apologize. I meant it as a joke. I used that term just as sort of a joke, first of all. But anyway,
we're wrestling with three challenges, whether it's the pool or whether it's a restaurant. You know, it's smoke and COVID, and kind of related to it is a difficulty finding employees. That said, I just want to say to this group, Lonnie already knows, I already shared how I felt, but even with all those challenges, the group of young people that were hired to run the Daniel Meyer Pool this summer, one of the best groups, and I have swam at that pool for, you know, 25 years. So I just wanted to throw that out there that was an unexpected, like, wow. And they're mostly young women, and they are just kicking it. So anyway,
I'm going to share that, Risa.
And about the needs assessment, you know, in fact, we're not going to do it formally. Ask your friends, ask when people you come into contact, say, hey, I'm on this subcommittee. And what do you think would be something needed in the recreation department? You know, this is an ongoing thing for us as members, constantly ask everybody you see almost just, hey, give me some comments. What do you think? And jot down a few notes. And then so it'll help, you know, this is just an ongoing thing that as long as you're on the subcommittee, and as a parks commissioner, people ask me all the time, hey, Jim, what's up with this? Or what's happening here? What are we doing there? You know, and so we're the spokespeople for this recreation subcommittee. So get your feelers out so they know you're part of that, and they come to you and they'll call you up and say, hey, I got an idea or this and that. That's really the networking in town. I've kind of thrived on networking in the last 40 years in town, and it's just made so many amazing connections. So we are now part of the solution to this recreation issue. And it's a really tough position we're in. You know, when we formed this, we had full staffing, we had better budgets. And as Risa mentioned, this is a very, very painful time that we've gone through this last year and a half. And you know, we have to adapt and improvise continually. So that's kind of what I see is we might not be back to our original recreation system, but we're going to have a new reality, and we got to figure out what that is. So that's maybe we've changed our mission statement a little bit from what we when we had our very first meeting back before COVID. Yeah, go ahead.
So is the goal going to be then next time to come up with a subgroup from this group that is doing needs assessment, or is our whole group going to be doing needs assessment? What was the goal?
That's a great question. Yeah. In when we meet and we achieve a quorum, that makes it part of the public meeting process. So what we've done with the Bee City USA subcommittee is if the larger group decides to move a goal forward, then a small group of people from this group, a spin-off little working group that is less than a quorum, could get together more frequently and move that goal forward. So that would be the idea of breaking us out into two smaller working groups, each less than a quorum, to get some traction on two different goals that we've kind of sensed are on the way. And Lonnie can explain what those two different goals were.
Yeah.
What are those two goals?
Yeah, so, and again, this is open to discussion. Mm-hmm. This is just something that we've kicked around as staff to move the goals of the needs assessment forward. We see it kind of working in two different arenas. And one is, it's kind of internal and there's an external group. The internal group would be looking at developing a survey with questions to implement a valid survey to the community to gather data. But also that group could also look at other existing data sets that may help with demographics, may help us kind of flesh out where Ashland is, what people want. And so it's kind of more of an internally focused data collection group, more of the quantitative data, if you will. The second working group could be more of an external group that is focused more outwardly to engage the public, to do listening sessions, and just be in more direct contact with the community. That would also give us more of the qualitative data side of things. Now, of course, in implementing a survey, you're going to need marketing. You're going to need to get the word out and get it out in front of people in an appropriate fashion. So there may be some merging points there between the internal and the external groups. But that is one idea that we came up with. Again, we don't have to form these today. Maybe taking that information, the folks here can kind of think about whether they'd like to do one or the other, or maybe even both, depending on the time you have available. So that's a real brief overview of it. I think it would be something, again, in the bylaws, if I read it correctly, would be formed by this group to vote and say, we are establishing these working groups in order to work towards these goals and be able to go from there.
Can I ask a quick question? How will these groups, if there's two of them, how will they tier back, if at all, to the kind of brainstorming tool that we used in our last couple of meetings, which I came to after the most recent meeting, which was a really interesting experience to just do it on my own and read everybody's comments in there. And obviously there's a lot of input there. So what's happening with that input, I guess, is what my question is.
So my hope was to take that brainstorming document that we've entered all of our thoughts and particularly questions that we'd like to have answered and hand that over to the working groups. And I think that the first working group that Lonnie described that would be focused on developing survey questions mm-hmm. could really utilize that brainstorming document to figure mm-hmm. out what survey questions can we generate from those questions? Which mm-hmm. of those that we brainstorm together can be turned into things that we want to ask the public? Mm-hmm. And maybe if there are questions that aren't readily answerable by a survey, we might find a different avenue to finding that information. Like it could be studying the demographics of our town or looking at existing data sets that might exist in SOU or connecting with partners to see if they can answer some of those questions for us. Mm-hmm. But there's definitely a mishmash of different types of questions in that document. And right. some of them I think are going to be really important to fueling the generation of survey questions in group one. And then if it's not a survey question, it could be something that you ask in a focus group or a community listening session, or you ask it to everybody who walks through the front of Lithia Park and you've got a little clipboard with you, you know, and you have a little conversation with folks as they pass through the entrance of the park. So there's a lot of different ways we could gather that information. And I feel like that resource will be handed to the working groups to figure out how to use that as like the raw materials to move forward.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, I think the last thing that we have on our list of things we need to do is to set a time for next time. Are we looking at doing 2 months out again, or Lonnie or Libby, did you have something planned already?
Rachel did message and she did say October.
Okay.
And I believe if we're operating the second Thursday of the month, that would put us on October 14th.
14th. And did we need to switch to a later time because of the school conflict, or is that, did we table that? Because for a while we were looking at doing 4 o'clock because of to accommodate the school. I can't remember who it was who couldn't make it that early.
Rebecca Bjornsson does work at school.
And Leslie, I know your class schedule will have started by then.
I'm teaching until 3:30 on Thursdays, so.
Is it possible for people to shift until at least 3:45 or maybe 4? Is that possible?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Would we want to set a tentative date and time and then get confirmation from everyone for October 14th at 4 p.m.?
Sounds good.
Sounds good.
Okay.
Good.
So we're going 4 to 4:30?
4 to 5:30.
4 to 5:30, I'm sorry.
I mean,
we're efficient here. Come on.
Ooh, we can talk fast.
Okay, 4 to 5:30 on the October 14th.
Yeah. And then maybe Corey and Val, if you want to be involved as vice chair, we can talk about how some of the discussions that came up today could be spin-off discussions in the following meeting, because we'll want to vote on the bylaws. We'll want to reconsider these working group like objectives and who's on the different working groups and who might want to participate in that. Mm-hmm. And then if that doesn't take up the whole time, maybe we can come back to some of the comments that Jim and Risa and everyone were making. Maybe look at the org chart and the way Parks and Rec interacts. Does that sound like a reasonable approach?
Sounds excellent.
Yeah. I may have a conflict just at that time. I may not, but it's my dad's birthday. He'll be turning 86, and it'll be the first time I've seen my parents in a year and a half. They're coming back stateside from Mexico.
If you're the only one who can't make it, we should talk about that. But on the flip side, you are a vice chair, so.
and it may not be a conflict. You know, it may be that, you know, we do whatever we're doing for his birthday earlier in the day or later or something like that.
Okay. Well, let us know when you know. We'll be flexible.
I will.
We may find our own conflicts at that time. We'll have to review or revise, so.
Sure, sure. We can say it tentatively, and then we'll email you all.
Yeah.
That all we need to say?
Mm-hmm.
5 o'clock.
Adjourn.
Okay.
Thank you, Corey. Good job getting us through everything.
Thanks, everyone. That was really good.
Thank you.
Thanks,
guys.
Bye.